All right, you guys, here's how to support the show. Sign up for the RSS feeds at scotthorton.org, iTunes, and Stitcher. You can donate per interview if you want at patreon.com/scotthortonshow. Sign up for weekly or monthly donations or do a single donation by way of PayPal. Just go to scotthorton.org/donate to find out all about that. And you can shop amazon.com via my link. I get a kickback from their end of the sale, not yours, so your prices stay the same and all that. Review the show on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like it, tell other people you like it. Share it on Facebook and Twitter and that kind of thing. Tell your friend. Subscribe your mom's phone to it without asking. You know, whatever you got to do.
Sorry, I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Introducing our friend Dan McAdams. He runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity at ronpaulinstitute.org and, of course, is the co-host with Dr. Paul of the Liberty Report. Welcome back to the show, Daniel. How you doing?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Very happy to have you here. Hey, I'm sorry. I've been gone. I missed a bunch of things. I had to do a little bit of traveling. Now I'm back. And then while I was gone, though, you wrote this piece, Russia Sanctions and the Coming Crackdown on Americans. So, first of all, I guess, tell me, well, we already talked about this some, but go back over a little bit about what these sanctions are, and then we'll get to the second part of that, what all they have to do with us. So, what are the sanctions, the new sanctions against Russia do, the ones that Trump has by now signed?
The first thing in the rationale is absolutely asinine. It cites Russia's taking of Crimea, which we know is much more complicated than annexation. It discusses the destabilization in Ukraine without even mentioning the fact that the U.S. government was behind the overthrow in the first place. And it mentions the so-called Russian involvement in the elections, which, if anything, is looking less and less true every day. So the justification is totally faulty, as is the case with Iran, which was just certified to be in compliance with the nuclear agreement. And here we slap new sanctions on it. You know, we're the ones that are not in compliance by slapping new sanctions on. So the whole rationale behind it is stupid. The whole philosophy is, you know, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Oh, we can't make them do what we want. Put some sanctions on them. That'll do it. And that's just the mentality. And the vote was so lopsided. There are only 3 members of the House and 2 members of the Senate to vote against these. It's just really disgusting.
Yeah, well, and you know, I saw on Twitter where they were saying that, well, first of all, if anybody's trying to get McMaster fired, it must be because Russia put him up to it. And then, oh, see, that makes perfect sense. I saw Matt Duss, who is, you know, a progressive writer who's sometimes good on Palestine. I don't know if he's good for anything else, but I saw him saying, which I guess is to say, though, that he's not just a Democrat. You know, he actually can think and read and write and stuff like that. So not simply a partisan. But he was saying, well, of course, right? See, Russia would want to get rid of the guy on the National Security Advisor who supports the Iran deal. And I'm going, yeah, but why would they want to do that? Russia just helped Vladimir Putin himself and his guy Lavrov. They just helped Obama and Kerry to get Iran to sign the thing in the first place. This was a big joint condominium between their government and ours to make this happen. Why would they want to do that? Oh, well, you know, because they hate us. I guess because we're free or something.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this, Scott, is this whole thing about the Russians being behind the plot to fire McMaster. This all comes from this very weird thing. You've probably seen it. This Hamilton 68 dashboard that's affiliated with the German Marshall Fund. And what they have come up with was some kind of, it reminds me of the prop or not thing that they had at the end of last year that proved that that you and me and Lou Rockwell and we're all just a bunch of Ruskies. But this is a new thing launched by the German Marshall Fund, which is extremely well-funded, primarily by our government. And they have some kind of thing where they're able to measure Twitter bots and trolls on Twitter to find out what the Russians are up to, you know, and they monitor some 600 Twitter accounts. They won't tell us which ones. They won't tell us their methodology, but they will tell us what they come up with. And yesterday, that's what they several news articles came out saying, this monitor of Russian influence has concluded that firing McMaster is a top Russian priority. You know, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious. It's like the witch trials. You know, it's a mass hysteria. But, you know, what's funny is this German Marshall Fund thing, this Alliance for Securing Democracy, it makes itself out to be very scientific, bipartisan. Then you click on the advisory council. I know you're going to be shocked, Scott. Mike Chertoff, David Kramer from NED, Bill Kristol, Michael Morell, Michael McFaul, Mike Rogers, all neocons from R&D side. Oh, yeah, okay, it's bipartisan. No, they're hardcore neocons. That's their party. So these are the great minds behind this investigation of Russian influence.
Well, what's funny about that, too, is they just open the same desk drawer and call up the old staff of PNAC or whatever. They don't have even cutouts that they can use and try to pretend that this is anything but Bill Kristol for once, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same old guys, and you know they're going to be getting a paycheck out of this. But you look at who's funding it, the State Department. HUD, which is weird. And then you have this all these sort of foreign governments, the Baltic governments and et cetera. And then you have the military industrial complex kicking in a lot of money too. So come on, this is a joke. You know, this is not a serious
thing.
Well,
and that's the thing, right? Is it is tragedy and farce and all that, right? Where this is the Red Scare, except that global communism does not exist. So yeah. It's the Kremlin scare, except that, as Doug Bandow points out six times a week, the EU has more people and more money than the USA. And they're between us and Russia. What the hell is this our problem for, even if it was true? And it's not anyway. So, you know, the whole thing. I see them, too, again, with the liberal consensus on Twitter. You know, what are we going to do when Russia invades Latvia? As though it's just, it goes without saying that everybody knows that it's simply a matter of time and probably not much time before the tanks roll into the Baltics.
What makes me crazy is, okay, I get it, left. You don't like Trump. Okay, guess what? I mean, we've talked about this before, Scott. You know, on most of this stuff, we're with you. So why don't we do something? Why don't we get out of this hysteria and take a look at what's actually happening that we've got a problem with, you know?
Right. And mostly the Reds, I mean, the actual communists and leftists, they see right through this stuff and criticize the liberals just the same as you and me. It's the centrist partisan consensus behind this. Anybody with a, you know, it's that whole thing, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. Well, if you stand for something, then you can see right through a lot of BS, you know, even if you're wrong about other stuff, which is, I'm sure, what the Reds would say about us, of course.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I mean, come on. If you're not trying to rationalize your support for Hillary Clinton somehow, then this is obviously all stupid. But
yeah. And it's a perfect storm, though, because the military-industrial complex wants nothing more than to have another bogeyman. They've got to keep it ramped up. They've got to keep the gravy train running. Yeah. And then you have all the Dems and the neocons who've climbed on board because they wanted Hillary to win. So it is kind of a perfect storm. And what's the sick part is that the Republicans, they're completely gutless with very few exceptions. Nobody's standing up and saying, this is BS. You know, this is garbage. Let's move on. Even the people that are around the president are so mealy-mouthed about this. They're so terrified. Oh, no. It really makes me sick.
Yeah, of course. Well, and the joke is that you got Mr. supposedly, Mr. Art of the Deal is the one sitting in the chair. So what would you do in a situation like this? When you're outnumbered, attack, right? I mean, what are you going to do except double down? And the answer is so simple, and it's huge and grand like a big skyscraper. What you do is you invite Putin to D.C. I know I'm a you know, broken record on this. Invite Putin to D.C., spend a week wining and dining him and let him sleep in the Lincoln bedroom and everything. And then you sign a big treaty to limit nuclear weapons by some great amount. And then you just say, what? And then you just ask the entire American left, including all the liberals, too, you know, everyone to the left or the center, is this not what you want? You going to call this treason to do what Ronald Reagan always dreamed of and get rid of nuclear weapons? Well, here, we're going to get rid of as many as we can, cut our stocks by 3/4, whatever it is, and then just shove it down the Democrats' throat. You don't like it? Impeach me. Remove me from office for signing a new arms limitation treaty. And what are they going to do about that? They'll be checked and mated, and that'll be that. But, of course, he'd have to stand up to all of the machine that runs the American right as well. And they're not going to tolerate that any more than the Democrats, I guess.
And not even his own party, but his own appointees. I mean, you had this absurd situation where Mike Pence was over in Eastern Europe going on about how great this sanctions bill is and how the president is right on the same page, literally at the same time as Trump was tweeting, this sanction bill is crap. I'm so angry about it. I mean, this is nuts. You know, I mean, it's just crazy. His own staff, the people around him aren't on the same page. I mean, it makes me wonder what kind of a boss he was and how he got to be so successful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I wonder that, too.
I joke about it with Dr. Paul. You know, we laugh about, can you imagine in your office if your chief of staff just openly disagreed with you on a vote or a policy? You know, no, I'm sorry, the congressman has a different view than mine. It's just absurd.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's, of course, what McMaster did to him on Korea, too, that, oh, Thad, don't worry, we're paying for it. No, we're not going to make you pay for it, South Korea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't get that part. I really don't.
Well, I mean, the answer is it's because he's an idiot, you know, and all these leaks come out where they're talking bad about him. But, you know, it's true that he can't read. In fact, you know, they're complaining that they're trying to convince him to double down in Afghanistan and he doesn't want to. So part of the smearing him for not wanting to double down in Afghanistan is that he's too dim-witted to, you know, read a simple page about it. He doesn't want to. He doesn't have any interest in it. And, you know, maybe he could read a page about golf. I don't know. But he can't read a page about who's who, even bullet points, who's who in Afghanistan, why we're on this side instead of that one, or whatever it is. It's not just that, I mean, and this is their spin attacking him, but it just sounds right to me that what he wants to hear is some easy thing, and they don't know how to tell him an easy thing, and so that's where he's stuck. You know, go in there and bomb the hell out of ISIS. Well, that's easy. Gloves off. You know, collateral damage, I'm not concerned. Go ahead and hit him. That makes sense to Trump, right? But, you know, build up which local militia to fight which other local militia in Afghanistan is too complicated for him to follow. If he could, he'd probably be supporting their policy at this point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what I wouldn't give to put him in a room with Eric Margolis, you know, for just 20 minutes, you know, and just tell him, listen to this guy. You know, it's all you need to hear. No.
Well, yeah, they don't let Eric Margolis come around no more, I don't guess, but it's really too bad. Although, you know, and this is the thing, Afghanistan, I think, is the one issue where, and Twitter proves it, man, y'all can all search Twitter for Donald Trump and Afghanistan, and for five years, he said, this is terrible. He attacked Obama for it, and when Obama said, no, we are sticking with the deadline in 2012, and that the surge is coming to an end, just like in the deal. Trump supported him. He said, I support Obama on this. He's right about this. Bring him home. End this thing now. So he was being nonpartisan about it right there. It was issue-oriented. He even directly supported President Obama, his nemesis, who was born in Kenya and all of this crap, you know, on that issue. Like, he's had, for whatever reason, whoever convinced him that that was the wrong thing to do a long time ago, they did convince him, and it stuck. So even now, they're kicking the can down the road. They can't quite get him to commit to even sending 5,000 more. So,
I mean, I just, in my heart of hearts, I want to believe that he has good instincts somewhere hidden in there, you know, that he really believed this thing about getting along with Russia and getting out of Afghanistan, and you have to be nuts to go into Syria. You know, I want to believe that. I hope it's true. I mean, there's a lot of things I want to believe in. But but you do have to wonder, if it is true, then why can't he get people to do what he wants them to do? I don't get that part. Maybe the deep state is what everyone says, and he's feeling threatened.
Yeah, well, and also he's as shallow as he appears to be, too. I mean, mostly this is a TV show to him. In other words, you know, people like you and me are all interested in the actual policy and who's doing what on the ground, wherever, and why it matters, and what would happen if they started fusing hydrogen atoms together and this kind of thing. And yeah. And we disdain all the politics of Sean Spicer this or whatever, Mooch or that or whatever. Who cares about all that stuff? But to him, and that's what politics is. It's the TV show of politics, cable TV news, the TV show. And I don't think that he really thinks of most of this stuff on much deeper of a level than that.
And I think
that's probably the same for most of DC, honestly, but I don't know.
No, but you know who doesn't think that way is the neocons, and they love someone like Trump because he's an empty cup. They can just come in and fill it. That's what they did with W. You know, the guy didn't have an ounce of curiosity in his body, and they came in, oh, it's okay, Mr. President. And that's what the neocons are doing to Trump, unfortunately. They love this kind of situation.
All right, hang on just one second. Hey, guys, The War State by Mike Swanson. Great book about the rise of the military-industrial complex after World War II. And check out all his great investment advice at wallstreetwindow.com. And if you want to buy some precious metals, you go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's rrbi.co. rrbi.co. Buy your anti-government propaganda at libertystickers.com. Stickers for your band or your business at thebumpersticker.com. 3T Editing for your writing project at 3tediting.com. And of course, sign up for Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom, Darren's Coffee, etc. via my links on scotthorton.org. Go-Kart Galaxy for your mini bike parts too. And yes, the book is coming out very soon. And it's funny too, because they keep saying that it's Madison McMaster, the adults in the room, and oh, thank goodness Kelly is here now. We have nothing but military men running the entire civilian side of the national government at this point. And thank God for that, because at least they know what they're doing. And on some things like Iran, it's like, well, I think maybe Bannon and them are worse. But then on things like Afghanistan, it seems like the generals are worse. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, Scott, that I've been thinking about. This whole cooked up thing from yesterday about how McMaster is alienating these supposed good guys, the good nationalists. To me, I mean, I look at the policy differences between the two of them, and you're both for war. You're both for attacking Iran. What are you talking about? Yeah. You know, this is not a policy difference.
Yeah, I mean, all the people that he fired three people in the last few weeks, Harvey and Cohen Watnick, and then the other guy, I forget his name. And all three of those guys are nuts. All three of those guys are, you know, right-wing nationalists, for whatever reason, Iran-obsessed weirdos. They're not neoconservatives. Well, maybe the Cohen Watnick guy is. I don't know. But you know, clearly for McMaster to fire them, I don't have a problem with that. They all should not be on the National Security Council. Why would they? He was being criticized for not letting that horrible woman, Hirsa Ali or whatever, who demonizes all of Islam, and that McMaster wouldn't let her come and give a speech to the rest of the National Security Council. Well, good. I mean, what in the hell? The worst part of the Tea Party type right-wing thinking is being excluded, and that's supposed to be the problem? No, I mean, hell, that part's what's good about McMaster, thank God, I guess. Except, who's left to stand between him and escalating in Afghanistan? Or the next place? I mean, they say that he's worse of a hawk on Syria. Why is he better on Iran but worse on Syria? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I don't get it. You know, it's like, I wish he had some of our sensibilities. Then we'd say, great, he fired some bad guys, and he's going to turn things around. But it's like, okay, no, I don't want your war. I want my war. I want this one first. You know. It's,
all right, now, so wait a minute. Back to tracking Russian disinformation. This is a really important thing. It sounds so, well, as we were talking about tragedy and farce, it sounds so stupid on the face of it. You know what I mean? Like back in the days of anti-communism and Joe McCarthy, people were really scared. People were accusing everybody of being a communist all the time, and you did not want to be accused of being a communist, whether you had the slightest thing to do with it or not. It was a big deal. This, I laugh in its face. You got to be kidding me. Yeah, antiwar.com, noted sock puppets of the Russians, except that, well, we got 25,000 pages of written opinion pieces that anybody can read going back 20 years and judge it for yourself in that free market of ideas type of a fashion. You've got to be kidding me, right? So who cares about that? And yet, no, they're already coming for our ass with this, the proper not thing. It wasn't just a hoax in the Washington Post. They've used that to, apparently Google is using that to marginalize the groups on that list, which included Amnesty and yep. the ACLU and all kinds of very mainstream, or not mainstream, but prominent progressive groups, mostly not hardcore Reds or any kind of Russian puppets. I don't know if there were any Russian puppets on the list at all. And then, but your thing here is taking this further, and you can talk, say whatever you want about that. I'll be quiet. But your thing is taking this further and saying that in the sanctions, they might be, you know, going ahead and defining this whole thing broadly in the sense of, well, if you're against the Iraq war, then you're objectively pro Saddam. And they're going to try to do that to us here and say we're objectively pro Russia to some kind of criminal degree. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, my reading of that section, I think it's 224, may have been changed in the final version, maybe 234 of the bill. It talks about quote unquote persons. Who are found to be in transactions with a Russian defense or intelligence services. The word transactions is not defined elsewhere in the bill, which I think means it's left very wide open. But the question, what are these transactions and what is Russian intelligence? We know that Pompeo, the CIA director, has on numerous occasions accused places like RT of being fronts for Russian intelligence. They're trying to make that connection so that they won't have any First Amendment rights in the U.S. No, this isn't the press. This is Russian intelligence. So if they do that and they make the connection successfully, and what happens if you go on RT? What happens if you work for RT? What happens if you listen to RT? What if you share links to RT? This lays the groundwork. And people say, well, that's never going to, that's way far away. Well, they also said that the NSA wasn't listening to your phone calls, you know, that you're just being paranoid.
Yeah, they say a lot of things.
So this lays the groundwork, and I think the first phase will be to go after RT and Sputnik and the others directly. And then it could go further. You know, what if you, you know, what if you share a link with your friends? Well, what if you also say you're against sanctions? Well, that's what the Russian intelligence services want you to be, against sanctions. So right. you've got an article.
Well, you're against McMaster. That's what Russia wants out of you, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the hysteria grows, I don't think you can discount anything happening with regard to undermining free speech and the free press in the United States.
Well, and then there are those like yourself and Ron and at antiwar.com and, of course, Robert Perry and everybody at consortiumnews.com, Max Blumenthal and people like that who are not going to bend on this and are going to, you know, keep at it. So, but, you know... I'm sure you probably saw this, I guess, a year and a half ago or something about the social scientist who did the research that showed that just Google search result rankings, just in the top three or four results, can absolutely sway political opinions by the margin, you know, every time or something, 5 or 10 points this or that way. And they did the experiment over and over again as best they could. And they really found how important it was what comes up first. Because, you know, you type into Google, what's this plus that? Or you type into Google, how do I get somewhere? And overall, it gives you just factual answers. That's your experience with Google in life. And so, but the opinions that it pulls up for you and the rank of those opinions, it's not that you necessarily think this way. It's just sort of becomes subconsciously built into your mind that Google knows what the right answer is. And and that everything that's a matter of opinion is also just a matter of fact. It just sort of kind of seems that way. And they tell you what's important and what's true and what's real. And if Consortium News is on page 5, then it doesn't exist. You know, if Robert Perry gets it right every day from now on, it doesn't matter if Google won't show it to you. And if they even if they show it to you at the bottom of the first page, that's, you know, a huge hit. And they're doing this deliberately, apparently. I'm sure you saw that article at the World Socialist site where they had tracked the ratings of the groups on the proper not list, and it's pretty ugly.
It's an incredibly powerful tool, an incredibly powerful propaganda tool, and we have established that Google has – it certainly has relationship with the CIA. So it's –
a billion-dollar relationship with the CIA, you mean, right?
Just a little one, you know, but it is
a
terrifying.
Little B billion, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If they don't see you, you don't exist. If you're right. I mean, if you're, what are the results of the talks between country X and country Y? You're not going to scroll through to the 40th page. It's just not going to happen. So it's very frightening. And yeah, we'll disappear. I mean, Scott Horton will disappear. Anti-war will disappear. Ron Paul Institute will disappear. You just won't find it anymore.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is they have such a huge, and it is more or less a natural monopoly, because their search engine, certainly back when, was so much better than everybody else's and that kind of thing. And also, for whatever reason, it seems like the privacy protecting actually respect you one, they named it DuckDuckGo, which is just really obnoxious and annoying, and nobody wants to say that. Google kind of, you know, has a nice ring to it. And So I don't know that... I don't know that there's going to be any kind of market backlash for this, right? It'll just like you said, we'll just be washed away with the tide and no one will notice and nothing will change. And no, the new, better, actually respect your intelligence and rights search engine will not replace it as the result of this, probably.
And they'll say, but Scott Horton, nobody else is saying what you're saying. I've done the Google searches. No one is saying it. Where are you coming up with this stuff? You know, that'll be the result.
Yeah, man. Hey, listen, let me ask you this. I like having knee-jerk reactions, and I have lots of them. But also, I always think I'm probably wrong about stuff as much as I can so that I can try to figure out what's really right before I go off half-cocked and actually get stuff wrong. So, obviously, my confirmation bias is that Venezuela's fallen apart because they promised everything to everybody for free. And even though the government owns all the oil there, that socialism just doesn't work, and they're printing too much money. And so what did you think was going to happen? And come on, man, economics is economics. It's as simple as that. But then on the other hand, I think, well, wait a minute. There's an American world empire just north of where they live that has a long and bloody history and filthy history of intervention in Latin America, including all kinds of financial games that I don't even necessarily understand. And so I know that you know a bit about economics and that you know a bit about world politics, too. And I wonder whether the obvious kind of look, empty store shelves, hyperinflation, what do you think's going to happen kind of explanation is too simple, and whether we really need to look a little bit deeper about America's national government and its role in Venezuela's crisis.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the whole idea that it's either or is a mistake. You know, they can be having economic problems because they're embracing a bad economic system. But they could also be having problems because of U.S. interference. I mean, look at Sweden, look at Denmark. They've got a lot more socialism than Venezuela does. As Mark Abella, who's done some great posting on Facebook, he's in the banking industry, has pointed out, Venezuela has a lower corporate tax rate than the U.S. So the idea that somehow that they're, you know, that everything is owned by the government is simply not true. I'm sure there's plenty of mismanagement, plenty of corruption. But what we do hear is the drums of war being beaten for the U.S. to be involved in Venezuela. We know that President Obama has put numerous sanctions, has crippled the banking sector, has frozen them out of the world financial markets in an attempt to bring Venezuela to its knees, because it won't do what the U.S. wants.
Well, talk a little bit more about that, because I plead guilty as hell for missing it when they pass those sanctions or sign them or what have you. To what extent, I mean, are these crippling sanctions, like against Iran? This is, you know, full-scale embargo or somewhere a third of the way between, or what?
Between, but it has to do with the banking system, the international banking system, and how the U.S. controls the international banking system. You know, it's the same thing that's happening with the Russia sanctions. If you have a transaction with you probably saw Diana Johnstone's fantastic piece a week or so ago about it.
Yeah, we ran that.
It explains it much better than I can about how the U.S. octopus, banking octopus is everywhere. And so if you do a transaction in a dollar, then you're a U.S. person. And so that has a lot to do with it. I can't cite in front of me, but I know there are executive orders dealing with Venezuela that President Obama signed. The idea is to strangle them. And you say, well, why? Why do they care? Well, they have the largest proven oil reserves in the world. So you think that wouldn't attract the attention of the people who got us into Iraq and got us into...
You know, I should talk with Greg Palast again about this, because he always said that Venezuela, Hugo Chavez anyway, back when, I don't know about Maduro, but he always said Chavez got along great with the Cokes, you know, with Houston, Texas. He didn't have a problem with them. He had a problem with Washington, D.C., because he wasn't recycling petrodollars and all of that. He had taken money, even billions of dollars, out of the Federal Reserve, and he was undercutting the IMF by making not, you know, high-interest, exploit-you, blackmail-you loans like the economic hitman, like America, but just honest loans, to development loans to other Latin American countries and that kind of thing. But that when it came to oil in Houston, he always got along. So I wonder if something there has really changed, or whether it's a matter of Exxon versus Citgo or what, you know?
Yeah,
Citgo is their stuff.
Yeah. Citgo, yeah, it's hard to know without all the details. But one thing we do know is that they're definitely ramping up the war machine. They're using a lot of Beltway libertarian types to ramp it up, because, you know, the neocons are all for regime change. But if you can get, and this is what Mark writes about, the so-called freedom think tanks, to go in there and say, oh, he's hurting his own people. I mean, we've heard this before over and over, yet people keep falling for it. He's starving his own people. He's killing his own people. We got to go in there. You know, that's what it always leads to. We got to do this, that, or the other. Well, how about if we don't do something? How about if we stop freezing them out of the banking system? How about if we stop sanctioning them? How about if we just leave them alone, and then we'll see what happens? And then if they do fall, if they do change their government on their own, then at least we don't have the blood on our hands.
Right. Well, and you know, it should be pointed out here, too, that the oil in Venezuela was always owned by the government. That the way, at least according to Greg Palast, it was never on anyone's private property. It wasn't that Chavez had come and nationalized the deal. They always had socialism there. It's just that before, the socialism was only for the rich white people, and they got all the benefit of the oil spoils, and to hell with everybody else. And what Hugo Chavez did was he took that same money from that same oil that the government owned all along. In fact, Palast said that it was like barren wasteland where the oil was, that not even Indians lived there. He didn't even steal it from the Indians. And Palast would have been happy to stick up for Indians if anybody had ever stolen it from them in the first place. But he's like, no, nobody lives on this land. It's unlivable land. It never even belonged to the Indians. It never belonged to anybody except the government of Venezuela. And that the only difference in the previous system, the right-wing system, and the current one, is before it was only socialism for the rich, and now it's socialism for everybody, which isn't the best way to run your economy, but still, like you're emphasizing here, it's none of our damn business anyway.
And the same was true with Libya. The vast oil riches that they had were evenly distributed by Gaddafi. That doesn't mean you and I have to endorse that.
Sarah Palin style in Alaska. You call that red communism, you know?
But, you know, the precipitous decline in its economic situation, I don't think you can attribute that to any one particular factor, the failure of socialism. Socialism does eventually fail, obviously. But I don't believe in such a precipitous way without being kicked. And I think the U.S. is very happy to start to continue kicking Venezuela. And as a non-interventionist, I don't care if you're a libertarian or a tree-hugging leftist, what have you, you've got no right to tell the Venezuelans how to live.
Yep. And you know, it's funny, because as obvious as that sounds, that is, you know, really, you put it all wrong. I mean, you're supposed to be on the defensive at all times. Everybody knows that if something's wrong, we got to do something about it. And what's your argument against that? As you were saying a minute ago, people ask me all the time, why not attack Korea?
Like, yeah, don't you want to help?
Attack Korea? Jeez, man, really? But that is how far we're down this path on every question, you know, to a man with a howitzer, everything is a target.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly you're the monster. You don't want to liberate the people of Libya. You know, what's wrong with you? You don't want to save the people of Iraq. Well, look at every time we've tried to save people, how it's ended up. The track record is pretty bad.
Sure seems like it. All right, listen. Everybody, you can read what Dan McAdams writes and all the great writers over there at the Ron Paul Institute, ronpaulinstitute.org. And of course, he co-hosts the Liberty Report with Dr. Ron Paul every day. And now tell us about the upcoming conference in D.C. there.
September 9th, Washington, D.C. at the Dulles Airport Marriott. You've got great speakers, John Kiriakou, Peter Van Buren, Lou Rockwell, Ron Paul, a lot of other people. So we'd love to see you come out and join us September 9th. You can find it at ronpaulinstitute.org/conference is the easiest way to get info about it.
Cool. All right. Thanks very much, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, y'all. That's Scott Horton's show. Thanks very much.